I mean, of all the bugs that I have heard of people eating, I've heard grasshopper is the most palatable, I suppose. Yeah. At least
those
raw.
Are actually a delicacy.
Mm-hmm. I could eat them cooked, I suppose.
That you could get grass. You can get deep fried grasshoppers at the Mariners baseball stadium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're farm raised.
They're crunchy.
Yeah, these grasshoppers, like they feed them like a lemongrass diet.
I was gonna say, have you seen
and
the
they're
new
little
like,
zingy?
Have you seen the yeah. new chips? The new
oh yeah, I've
chips?
Had I've had bug chips before.
Yeah, yeah.
Bug chips.
Fascinating. Like
I think
they're
mine
actually
were made
making
from grasshoppers.
Yeah, well, they made from the part of some of them are.
I don't know if it's kosher.
I can't remember.
I have
if
no
insects
idea.
Are kosher.
If what?
Insects.
I mean,
know. I know.
John the Baptist ate locust.
True.
I, like, so, was, I don't know if he was Jewish.
Yeah, he was Jewish.
Okay, well.
All right, let's delve into our topic tonight.
Welcome to the podcast where your hosts sample a different scotch each season while we dive into current social, political, and economic issues each episode. This is Scotch and Socialism.
Tonight on Scotch and Socialism, we're talking about electric cars. That's right. Nothing remotely related to grasshoppers and eating them. Although that
I don't know sustainability.
That would be a great topic because eating like insects and alternative forms of meat is apparently way better for the environment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The methane cesspool that is our beef industry.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm Griff, your resident car nerd. Not for the evening, forever. It's a blessing. It's a curse.
It's really true. We can't get him to shut up about it. And I'm Jake, your resident big oil shill for the evening.
This is going to be fascinating because Jake lived in the heart of Silicon Valley and the righteous Tesla drivers.
And I hate big oil.
So it's a facetious position?
Yes. Excellent. I mean, I did say that I was the religious fanatic at one point.
True. I mean,
which in comparison to both of y'all.
If one of us is going to delve to fanaticism, probably going to be Jake.
True. And I am Russ, your resident idiot for the evening.
Am I just on
You're
the CIA watch list now?
Oh, absolutely.
Frick.
You've been there a while.
Why would the CIA be watching you?
I don't know. FBI.
FBI.
You're in this house making a podcast. Of course they're watching it. They're listening to every
you
word.
You saw Snowden.
True.
Anyway, EVs, and we're gonna say electric vehicle, EV. There's some terminology here. That's kind of the extent of it. There's a lot we can kind of talk about with this, though. For, against?
Sure.
What do we think?
Yeah,
where did all this start? It would be my first question.
Yeah.
Because I've heard about EVs for a decently long time.
Long time. Right. Well, at first, like, I always thought that Tesla was the first, like, viable electric vehicle, electric car anyway. Like, I remember seeing that show Leverage.
I love that
Which
show.
Was a fun show, right? The first episode, like the main character, I'll try not to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but the main character is like turned from this really sleazy guy into kind of a philanthropist. They're trying to stick it to the man, whatever. At the end of the first episode, they're splitting up their cash and, you know, most of the characters are doing something very self-gratifying with their cash or whatever, and they kind of rib him for getting this new car, and it was the first Tesla Roadster. It was CGI, like the thing wasn't even on the road yet at all.
Right.
But that was like the first time I remember seeing it, and for like that's the first time that I noticed it in the public scope too. Alas, I did not do much research before this particular episode, but I do remember kind of looking through some information. Electric cars have been around for a lot longer, and viable ones too, not just, you know, not just Tesla or not just
well,
like
we've
experimental
had true electric
stuff.
Cars. We've also had hybrids for a while.
We've had battery electric vehicles back as almost as far as internal combustion vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Back in the 19 teens.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was weird because they were very symmetrical and you could go forward or backward. And that's the thing about an electric propulsion
is
you can spin the motor either direction as fast as it will physically go. So they had, it was almost a perfectly symmetrical car, you know,
and I don't know where they, I don't know a whole lot about like the mechanical structure of them. But I do know that they were as almost as popular as regular gasoline cars. Cause I mean, back, we're talking way long time ago, over 100 years. People weren't driving very far or very fast.
Very true.
And so an electric car was not a problem. It was very quiet. Wasn't as smelly.
Well, I was gonna, the whole quiet
kerosene.
Yeah. Especially fuel back then. I'm just trying to like imagine the smell of the 1920s.
I'd rather not.
Oh, it's terrible. I'm sure.
Oh, I don't even want to smell the 50s.
Oh no.
Like I have an old car. Like I have a car from 1981, and it smells terrible most of the time. And I know that any of my automotively inclined friends listening to this are going to hunt me down and burn me at the stake with gasoline. But
if they can find it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, we're not on the East Coast. It's fine.
Yeah.
Don't use premium, guys. It's really expensive. It smells like fuel. It smells like oil. It smells like the 80s. And I can't.
So cocaine.
Like, I don't know what cocaine smells like.
You really. Never mind. Just
but go. Yeah. But I imagine like what the 50s must have smelled like when you didn't have catalytic converters. You had leaded gas. Cars were not efficient. And it was just everywhere. Just everywhere. It must have reeked just all the time. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine. You know, the 20s might have not have been so bad, though, because cars, the engines were smaller, and you probably didn't have quite as many cars.
True.
I'm guessing public transit in some areas was more prevalent than personal
vehicles. I found out recently, I walked Bloomsday here in Spokane this year with a few folks who've, you know, known the city for longer than I have, and I found out that Spokane used to have a trolley system, like an electric trolley system. Had no idea, and I think it basically went away when our public transit got privatized, if memory serves.
Privatized? But our public transit is operated by the city.
I don't think so. I
thought Spokane Transit Authority.
Yeah, I think STA is not owned by the city.
Fact checkers.
No one cares.
Yeah. I do remember in Spokane, they used to have, it was basically a bus, but it had an old-fashioned trolley chassis on it.
Oh, nice.
It looked kind of cool. I think I rode it like once or twice. Thought it was awesome. Dang, I just realized I haven't seen that thing in like decades. Kind of makes me sad. Anyway, not really related to electric cars. I think Tesla gets a lot of attention because they were probably the first large-scale visibility is a key thing company to put out a scalable electric vehicle. General Motors had the EV1 back in like the 90s, I think, but they only had a limited number of them, and they were almost like a beta test, and they leased them, and then they
and that's the thing, right? Like most companies crushed them. had a section that they did as a hybrid or as an EV attempt,
right?
But you've got Tesla where they basically said, no, we're just doing EV, we're just building electric cars.
Sure. Yeah, and you had some tiny startups,
yeah,
that people didn't really take seriously because they didn't really make viable cars. But when Tesla came out, the Roadster, which I don't know if it's based on the Lotus Elise or if it was just modeled after the Lotus Elise, it was like, oh wow, this is okay.
It
looks like a modern car. It doesn't look like a toy, and it can keep up in traffic, and it'll go 100 miles on a charge.
Yeah,
like having an electric car that looks fashionable.
Well, it doesn't look like a
blob.
I don't know, Cybertruck.
Well, okay, there's that.
That was weird.
Which is interesting that we've kind of come full circle on the aesthetic.
We're back around to like weird, blocky.
Well, yeah, but I mean like electric cars, like in the, because I remember seeing stuff as, now looking back through some of the research that I did years ago, there was some stuff in the early thousands. Electric vehicles, they had fabulous mileage. I think that's what you would call it for an electric vehicle.
Well, that's where it gets tricky, is because it's not measured quite the same.
Right, exactly.
It's miles per gallon.
They worked quite well. They didn't look super pretty, but they're like part of their whole thing was aerodynamics, right? Like the more resistance that you can cut out, the better your car is going to perform. And
Well, simple usually, shapes are easier to work with, right?
Right, exactly. Right. And usually the more aerodynamic you are, the less pretty you are.
Absolutely. Mm, absolutely.
Usually. Not always.
See, this is what's weird
about... A lot more research is required on that one, right?
Well, here's the thing about aerodynamics is that you can design a car to be aerodynamic for fuel efficiency purposes or for speed and handling purposes.
Oh, also true.
Because if you look at something like a McLaren 720 Longtail, gorgeous car, but it is very much obviously designed to do 200 miles an hour. You look at something like Prius or one of the Teslas, they kind of look a little bit the same. Now, the Teslas are a little more kind of swoopy, a little more, I hate saying this, sexy. Vomit.
You okay over there?
Yeah. I hate describing cars in that term.
It's got curves, man.
It does. And that's because the most aerodynamic shape in the world is a raindrop. But the interesting thing, if you look at like a Tesla or a Prius, is that they have what's called a cam back, mm-hmm. where the back drops straight down, and that's to reduce drag, basically. And I mean, I'm painting with an extremely broad brush here, but that helps the aerodynamics of the vehicle to make it more efficient, which when you're talking about electric is the name of the game. I've got a friend who has a Model 3. It's a dual motor range extender. He drove it from Seattle. I think they stopped in Moses Lake or Ellensburg just to get lunch, and they charged at a supercharger and made the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. He could have made it on one charge, but he prefers not to let it get below a certain percentage. Fair. You know. And he was telling me about like even the wheels on the Model 3, they look kind of funny. They're like big fans.
Uh-huh.
Actually add like 5% range, and you know this adds like 15% range, and the low rolling resistance tire adds like 10% range, and it was kind of that like, okay, so it's like a nickel and dime thing, just to kind of bump that range just a little bit higher, because I can guarantee if I drove a Tesla, like I'd want to drive a Tesla, I would not get the advertised range.
Right.
Well, that's true even with the non-EV though, right? Like if you drive your car like you stole it, generally your gas mileage goes down quite a bit.
Yeah, true.
I find that the first 2 years of my ownership of a car, the gas mileage sucks. And then the longer I own it, the better it gets. And it's not because of, you know, the longevity of the vehicle. It's because I'm not an idiot anymore. I'm not a leadfoot. I don't do stupid things like, you know, flooring it off the line every time it goes green.
Right. Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, I kind of do that with my car too. I've got a nicer Mazda 3. Shifted into quote-unquote manual mode, even though it's not a normal transmission. It's one of those conical units. I'm clearly not the car guy in this conversation.
That's all right. Keep
you should
going.
Be proud that I know that it's a conical gear assembly. I don't know.
Are you sure? I think you're referring to a CVT.
Yes.
Continuously variable transmission.
Yes.
I don't think Mazda has CVTs.
I think mine is just
OG automatics. To the internet.
Yeah, you go ahead. You're the car guy. Anyways, but yeah, you know, this thing can pick up and go. And
that's fun.
I used to use the paddle shifters, whatever. Now I'm like, I don't have time
for
that.
Mine has a sports mode.
Yeah.
That basically just kills off any chance of any good gas mileage.
Oh, yeah,
And, you know, but it's fun. Mm-hmm. You know, on ramps, always entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll do it if somebody, like, to the side of me is going onto an on-ramp and they're really ticking me off, I'll shift into sports mode or whatever.
Nothing
or
like an aggressive driver.
And just gun it. I have road rage, and I admit it. It used to be a lot worse. Now I'm just like, I'm going to get around you, and I'm not going to pretend like I'm not getting around you.
This is why you need an electric car. Have you ever driven a Tesla?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man.
I know.
It's got some torque.
Absolutely.
It has insane torque.
The engine is really cool, the, you know, general concepts of it. And so, but you're right, like after 2 years I kind of stopped that. Actually, after 2 years I moved to San Jose, where you really can't do that a whole lot because of traffic.
Fair.
You can speed up really fast on the on-ramp and then slow down really fast
as you get on the freeway.
Why an electric car makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Now we could also get into the whole like crazy stuff that happens with electric cars, especially in Silicon Valley.
Like there, what? I'm genuinely curious.
Okay.
Now,
so is it like, as an aside to our or as an anecdote to our topic, there was an article in, I think it was in Mercury News, which is like the local San Jose news, where a gentleman was arrested for the second time
in a different Tesla.
Yep. For setting the autopilot on and laying down in the back seat. He may not have been laying down. He was definitely not in the driver's
seat. I've seen this. I've seen people defend him.
Oh, I'm sure they have. And his response to all of this, "This is screw you money," was like, "I'm rich. I'll just get a new one." That was his response.
My goodness.
Almost verbatim. And
this is why,
like,
people hate California.
Oh, man. I just, like, to me, I can't imagine being in the mind space for that kind of thinking.
I don't know. There's been times that the level of care that I provide to the world is non-existent. And
that's...
Now, to throw that kind of money around...
What about to yourself?
Sure, sure.
Yeah. Like, you're looking at $50,000 a pop,
yeah,
not including whatever you're paying the cops.
Oh, there's going to be huge.
I can't imagine
it's
that
gonna
like
be
they're
going
to take his license away, and I'm sure he's going to have some sort of way of getting yet another Tesla.
The problem is Tesla calls their system autopilot.
Uh-huh.
And this is where the English major.
Have you seen the asterisk on the website?
I have not.
It says autopilot with an asterisk.
Gosh, I love it. I love
because right
oh,
now
gosh.
the self-driving capabilities are limited.
Oh yeah.
But they fully expect to expand them into full autopilot.
I know they expect to expand it, and they expect to hit level 5 automated driving and blah, blah, blah. It's a lot further than we think, I believe.
Absolutely.
And I will say one thing. I have a very complicated relationship and feelings around Tesla as a company. I don't really care for Elon Musk. I don't really care for a lot of their operations, I guess you can say.
Also,
I do think they make a very good foray into mass-produced electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy a Tesla if I had the money. I don't because I'm not in tech.
Even their base model is
even the base model is in the mid-30s. Yeah,
like it's not.
It's on the bed on average with a new car,
right?
Yeah. I mean, and that's how they position themselves. Mm-hmm. They position themselves with like Mercedes, BMW, mm-hmm,
sure,
Audi, and they're priced accordingly. Like a nice Model S is over $100,000. Which is about what you would pay for a 7 Series BMW or an S-Class Mercedes. I don't have the money for a Tesla, mm-hmm, but I have a love-hate relationship with them.
Oh, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Tesla either. Like, I remember the whole issue. There was some natural disaster, I think, in Florida a few years ago. I mean,
Florida is a natural disaster.
Which one?
Just want to clarify. Yeah,
there was one in particular, some sort of hurricane, I think. Again, Florida, so could have been any number of them over the last few years. But there was something like a lot of people had to evacuate fairly quickly. Sure. And Elon was just like, oh, well, I'll just remove the mileage restriction or something on your batteries. I mean, I hate software limitations. I hate them so much.
Tesla is like at the forefront of over air updates.
Yeah.
And you can pay to like one of my buddy with the Tesla. He's like, oh, I just got this over air update for like a performance pack. And it gives me like 50 more horsepower or something. Like, that's cool. But also the implications for that are horrifying. Like Ford, I think, just patented or got clearance to do like in-car advertisements on your infotainment screen. Right. This is the thing, is that car companies are becoming tech companies. Mm-hmm. Tesla is a tech company that just happens to make cars instead of computers. Well, they do make computers. They just put wheels on them.
Exactly.
Right. And so you get over air updates. And so you get a vehicle, you're getting to the point, and I'm going to put a more blame on Tesla for this because they're the one that kind of pioneered it, where you buy a car and then you buy features on top of it. Now, in some ways, okay, I can kind of get, like, if you do an a la carte approach, fine. But if you're already paying $60,000 for a car, like, give me all the software that comes with it. You know, give me
the functionality. But it doesn't come with luggage racks. It doesn't come with cargo nets. They're not giving you all the hardware.
See, luggage racks and cargo nets are accessories. There's a difference between accessories.
So is a performance chip in a.
There's a difference.
Well, is it a performance chip, or like this is the difference between like limiting your having the hardware or physical thing available,
sure,
versus having the software be put into place to limit it. Now with the performance thing, I think there's kind of a leeway here because there are, you know, like we actually do that with my current company with some of the hardware we develop. Like we find new ways of tuning the hardware that makes it perform better.
Sure,
right.
Sure.
And we find that after the product has been released
for
years.
I think those over-air updates are, are free.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. Now, leave a comment if you know.
See, I kind of feel like they shouldn't be, though.
Why?
Software development time. You had to find engineers to work on this issue, to come up with this particular configuration.
How do you feel about that, Mr. Engineer?
Again, it gets into a weird space for me. Because, tuning stuff and finding new and more efficient ways of doing it for hardware in specific, I don't have too much of a problem with, saying, hey, here's a new update. It's going to help your car perform better due to these, changes in XYZ voltages, whatever, in the hardware, and you can pay a little bit to have that upgrade. Now, there's kind of, I don't know. And the battery thing, to Tesla's credit, it's been a long time since I've researched this particular issue. To their credit, it may have been a limit that they had put in place to keep the longevity of the batteries. It may have been something that you would not want enabled.
Well, it's probably consumer protection, right? I mean,
right.
It's like, hey, we could stress these to a point where they might not function anymore.
Right. They might start to degrade.
In this scenario, it's kind of, I forget which manufacturer it was. It might have been Subaru. Someone had put basically a governor bypass in their system if you had the hazards on.
Really?
Yeah. And
So you could bypass your governor if your hazards were on?
Correct.
Interesting.
And so it was
governed to an emergency vehicle.
No, this was, essentially. I want to say this was probably late 90s, and it could have been just a rumor kind of thing that was floating around.
That would have been around the time for the rumors to be floating around.
I know, right? But it was an interesting thought. But it was said that the car itself was governed at 120 miles per hour.
Sure.
Which, sure, that sounds like a perfectly
reasonable place. A 90 Subaru? Well, 120 sounds optimistic.
Well,
I get what you're saying, though.
Not that I didn't take my 2003 STI up to 140, but...
Probably... That's about an aerodynamic as a brick.
Gets a little flighty at 120. Yeah. But yeah, no, the idea was that if you turn on your hazards, the governor would be removed and you could continue going further.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was that if you were going to be on a racetrack or whatnot, throw your hazards on and go nuts.
Interesting.
But like I said, no validation whatsoever on that one.
I'm just getting flashbacks to the opposite scenarios that I had to deal with in college, where I had this ratty old B2300 truck that weighed less than I did, managed to still get horrible gas mileage. And when you took it about 70 miles an hour, the whole thing started shuddering. It was awesome.
Classic motoring. Don't make them like they used to.
My first car had that problem. I kept finding bolts in the floorboard. I don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
It's just
extra parts.
Weight reduction.
Confetti.
Confetti.
Carfetti.
Metal confetti.
No, bad. Flashbacks. No. I mean, there are vehicles... Going back to that a little bit, there are vehicles you can buy that in their kind of, I guess, pedestrian trim levels are limited to 155. But you can get the Performance Plus package or whatever, the sport packages, that'll remove the limiter. Usually has to do with tires, though, because tires are a huge limiting factor on speed.
Really? The only thing touching the ground? Doing that speed? Yeah.
Who would have thought? So electric vehicles, okay.
Welcome to the episode, everyone.
Talk about segues.
One of the more odd
things.
Those
are garbage, by the way.
But they're electric.
True.
Sorry, Jake.
Jake loves it when we interrupt him. Continue, sir.
Oh my gosh. Speaking of these limitations, it's an interesting thing that's kind of come alongside with the advent of the electric cars. There weren't a whole lot of car companies out there doing this sort of, over-the-air cellular access.
Right.
Now, there were some. I mean, there's the infamous Jeep incident where, and this is moderately apocryphal from what I understand, where somebody was able to hack into somebody else's Jeep from remote and start screwing with stuff like the steering.
So... That might be an apocryphal story of it happening to an innocent person, but there was a actual, I think it was Road and Track or one of the car publications that did that.
Yeah.
And they had guys all right, we're going to see if it's possible. They had guys in the office with a computer and a guy driving the car, and they shut it off on I-5, just and killed it. Mm-hmm. He's like, can we restart it? I'm actually on the freeway. And they're like, sure, click, and there it goes.
Which,
and they've had that ability via the OnStar and other systems for theft time. And recovery, right?
Yeah, and it's talk about one of those things where I'm just oh man, because the way that Car and Track did it
Car and Track. I like Car and Track.
Drive and Track.
Car and Driver. Car and Driver. Road and Track.
The way that that publication did it was not through something like OnStar. It was through like their infotainment system.
Its own infotainment. Effectively. Update, yeah.
Which, like, talking, putting my software developer hat on right now, what the hell are you doing? You
Sounds like they needed a better web application firewall.
Sounds like they shouldn't have had those freaking systems tied together at all.
But they all are. That's the weird
part. Oh, it's terrifying. That's true. Like, yeah. I drive a car that's like, you know, thankfully it doesn't have any sort of wireless capabilities that I know of. But I mean, I've researched into it because I wanted to get like a remote start or something.
I was going
to
say, and that's the thing, is it does enable some neat features. Remote start, even like statistical data, which is kind of fun.
Telemetry, yeah.
Telemetry and whatnot. They do have the new ODB connector.
OBD, yeah.
OBD. To Bluetooth adapters where you can plug it in and bring it up on your phone. It's actually quite neat. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get runtimes and all sorts of other fun stuff.
But yeah, it's, I mean, with the advent of the electric car, we're seeing a lot of innovation just in the automotive industry. You know, specifically electric cars, you know, at the beginning of what will probably be the laugh track beginning of the blooper reel episode. I don't even know what we call the little blurb at the beginning of this, of each episode.
The cold intro, the warm intro. It's a warm intro.
The pre-show.
Sure, the pre-show. Like what we talked about a little bit in the pre-show about, you know, bug chips and things like that. Like as far as the environment goes, it's, you know, it's an important conversation, right? Like that's one of Elon's stated goals is to, you know, have electric vehicles take better care of the environment.
Well, it's not just Elon anymore, right? The federal government has now signed a 2035 mandate.
I thought that was just Washington State.
Washington State signed a 2030 mandate.
Oh,
there's
okay.
not a federal mandate, but a lot of states, I think 12 or 13 states have rolled out.
Okay.
Quote unquote. Now, in Europe, they have done countrywide mandates.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I'm pretty sure. Leave a comment below. It's becoming more popular.
We don't fact check anything we say here.
A little bit. This idea, though, that cities, states, countries are going to, you know, kind of combustion-free mm-hmm. mandates by XYZ date. It's interesting. Part of me thinks it's really a good idea. Part of me is a little skeptical.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in your more rural states like Montana, Wyoming.
It's going to be hard to adopt, right?
That's going to be kind of hard.
Mm-hmm.
Because not every manufacturer makes an electric car yet, you know? Yeah. And
now, do hybrids classify for that, like the Prius and such?
No, I think it's strictly EV.
Strictly EV.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing, too, and this is where the naysayers will find a toehold, is the infrastructure. And I know that the I word is a really big beating stick that the big oil shills will use against. Our grid can't handle it. That's a non-starter argument we'll get to later. But say you live in a very rural area, it might be hard to, and it's not even just like charging your vehicle at home. Like you could charge a car. Hell, if you have a farm, there are some solar panels on your roof.
You're fine.
Charge your car for free. But getting it to a dealership for service or things like that.
Well, just proximity to services and abilities. Exactly.
Well, and that's like.
And God help if you break down on a dirt road somewhere.
Right.
You know, trying to get AAA out there is already impossible.
Yeah.
No kidding. And that's kind of a curious thing, right? Is because. You know, as far as I know, none of the states, and I think even the countries in the world who have started mandating this, have not said, like, there will be zero combustion vehicles on the road.
It's a manufacturing thing.
You will not be selling new.
For Washington, it's after 2030. A car with a model year 2030 or later
will be
electric.
Right.
Which, that's fine.
Sure. That's a curious thing is we're still going to have this huge dual infrastructure, I guess. And not infrastructure in the way of, like, we have to support both gas stations and electrical or whatever. I'm just talking
about. That's
what
we're doing today.
Right.
That's the easy part.
Yeah.
I'm talking about kind of what you were alluding to earlier with repair. Electric vehicles. Again, not coming from a car guy, but they are different enough.
You would be surprised.
Really?
Yeah.
I would say there's going to be a slight difference in the sense that you might not think about, you know, normal combustion engine. You have a mechanic that works on it kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
whereas you have circuit boards and electronics in the new versions, right? but it's still just swapping out parts. They're not doing their own programming. They're not doing their own.
That's true. That's the kicker.
You know, monkeys can always replace parts. That's not a problem. Getting them in stock, as I think as they become more common, will become much easier. It will be interesting to see what happens. Like right now, trying to find older car parts, you go to junkyards, right? Trying to find specific stuff. With EV vehicles, it'd be interesting. It's like, hey, I need a motherboard from a 2031 Tesla.
But we're already kind of running into that now, right? With our current combustion cars? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, my car has tons of electronics that, like, I got a very specific warranty for the electronics because I'm screwed if they go out.
True.
And they're not covered under a normal car warranty, at least not with this dealership.
Interesting.
Find a better dealership.
Dealerships are
find a better dealership.
So shady, Mazda, and that is a whole other topic.
I think you're fine with Mazda.
No, like we talked, and it was, and it may have been an upsale. Like,
I think their electrics are probably fine.
Oh, they're solid. Yeah. I mean, I've never had.
It's not an Italian car, so you're probably fine.
Right. I had one problem with the electrics in mine, and that's because it was a used car, and they did something at the, like, it was working when I test drove it, the heated seat in the driver's side. And it went out by the time I actually bought it. And so I just took it back in and said, hey, it's not working. And they fixed it. And they would have done that even without the electric warranty because it was within a week.
And see, that's the thing is, unless the heated seat, and in your car, I doubt it is controlled on a CAN bus. That's basically the same as like replacing a brake pad. You know, unplug,
yeah, I think they just,
put the new pad in.
Yeah, I think they just replaced the whatever
the
unit
component.
Is.
Component, exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing about electric vehicles is that there are a lot of similarities between a modern electric car and a modern combustion car.
Yeah.
In that brakes, suspension, body steering, infotainment, it's all very similar. It's 90% the same. Now, when you get into things like batteries, controllers, motors, that's where it does get different.
But there's still those components.
There are components. And it really won't take that much training to get... So, to get a competent mechanic to the point where they're competent on both gas and electric vehicles. You know, in fact, God, I would much rather work on an electric car than a gasoline car. All the fluids and the grease and junk in a gas car.
Because you're like, and I don't even know for an electric car, like, because, you know, motor oil isn't exactly a thing in an electric car. There is some sort of motor oil, I would assume.
I mean, something's.
It's still mechanical.
Something lubrication has to lubricate. Somewhere.
I was gonna say, it's still mechanical.
Now, you will have, in some electric vehicles, and I think most, not all of them, will have coolant type systems to cool the batteries and the controllers because electronics generate heat.
And you want to talk about yet another series of stories from the Bay Area with Teslas and stuff. Oh my gosh, it seemed like at least once a month there was some traffic stop on the 101 or the 85 because somebody's Tesla blew up.
Yeah, and that's
not, not to say like it's all that bad. There are so many Teslas on the road in California.
Well, percentage-wise, right?
Like, I mean, it's just very high, and the percentage rate of actual like massive mechanical or electrical failure for Teslas versus normal cars is still freaking low. Same with sorts of like bodily injuries and deaths.
Right?
Wasn't there like was it the Leaf that spontaneously combusts?
No, I think it's. I have not heard of the Leaf. I have heard of vehicles doing that.
Like it was notorious.
I don't know if they have fixed it, but I do know that on some of the older Teslas, like the first and a half generation Model S's, their battery packs didn't have a lot of quote-unquote armor around them, and they were basically the floor. And so if you ran over debris in the road and it hit, and like damaged it could puncture cells.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Now, and that is a design flaw. You know, I'm an electric vehicle apologist. I'm not that much of an apologist. Like, that's just a bad design.
Yeah.
Fix
Which
it.
Which is
you know?
Going to happen no matter what. I mean, exactly. We've had, I mean, what was it? The Pinto?
Yeah, the Ford Pinto. Yeah, it gets some of those famously notorious, or I should say infamous, car stories are usually blown up beyond what they
really were.
Same
with the Teslas, though.
Right. But because they were so spectacular, and because they make for such great clickbait,
absolutely.
Or whatever the 1970s version of clickbait was.
Newspaper headlines.
Tablets.
Exactly. That's what all Fords or all Pintos are going to explode.
Right.
No. The case for that happened, they were rear-ended at like 60 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Like any car is going to have big problems.
Right. And that's not to say, like, I have a colleague of mine who loves Jaguars. and some older ones too. And I like I give him crap constantly about it. It's like, did you make sure to pack your fire extinguisher with your Jaguar this morning?
Oh, the good thing about a Jaguar is that the electrics aren't gonna work.
Yeah.
So you're not gonna have a fire. Yeah.
Yikes.
I think this leaves us in a pretty good space for a scotch break.
I mean, we were talking about British cars, so I think it's only
close enough.
Close enough.
This is your regularly scheduled scotch break.
Let's talk about scotch.
Let's talk about scotch. So,
scotch break.
Griff, what? Yeah. So we've talked a couple of times about peaty versus like non-peaty. What is the antithesis of a peaty scotch?
I mean, this is what's kind of interesting to me is that scotch kind of has this, I don't want to say reputation, but it's kind of known popularly. It's being like, oh, it's really smoky. It's got, you know, very distinctive taste. It's actually a pretty small sliver of the scotch world that is, or that does have that really distinct smoky body to it. Honestly, and this is probably my uncultured palate, a lot of scotches, bourbons, whiskeys, and ryes start to taste the same to me. I mean, there are slight differences, but and again, this comes down to me probably being an uncultured swine, but, and that's part of the reason I actually prefer a more heavily peated scotch is because it actually has some flavor distinction. So
sure.
I was going to say, you know, the as you drink more into the night, I suspect you have less of an ability to actually taste.
Maybe. I don't consume
There's
that.
There's a story about this in the Bible, but anyways.
can we make that a soundbite?
No, there is. Like, legitimately. That's it's the wedding
chaos.
At Cana when the Jesus turns the water into wine and it's the best wine that the host has ever had, and he's like, ah, usually you bring out the good wine when everybody hasn't been drunk yet, but you saved the best for last because, you know, you bring out the shitty wine when
nobody cares. That
yeah,
one, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, let the PBR flow.
I said a naughty word.
No one has ever said that
scripture.
Before, Russ.
Sorry, as a non-drinker, I have no idea what I'm saying. I'm just insane.
I mean, if I'm going to smash a whole bunch of just low-quality beer, PBR would probably be what I go for. Fair.
Ice House.
Anyways, back to scotch.
Gosh.
Yes, please.
So the peatiness adds a bit of flavor to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
now,
effectively
like,
smoke.
I was going to say, what does peat eat like?
Peat. It's like actual peat moss.
Okay.
Like,
I was wondering if it was the peat moss side of the world or if it was.
Yes.
Okay.
It's, I think we might have talked about this in another episode about how scotches kind of get their flavors. When a distiller is drying the cereal, the grain itself, they use smoke. So it's like smoke dried, almost like, you know, smoking meat. And depending on the concentration, I don't remember the exact chemical. I'm not a chemist, I'm an English major. Depending on the concentration of this particular chemical can give it a more or less peaty, like that really smoke, almost acrid flavor profile.
Gotcha.
A lot of them come from an island called Islay over on the west coast, off the west coast of Scotland. Very small, very rocky, very, you know, island. That's where you get scotches like Laphroaig, Lagavulin. There's another one that I'm forgetting, and I think Brookledick is over there too.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your really peaty scotches.
Gotcha.
Like a Brookledick Octomore. 103.4, I think, is the actual. And I'm not, again, not sponsored. It's supposed to be one of the heaviest peated scotches.
That does sound good.
I would love to find a bottle. They're $200.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that's if you can actually find one.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you usually
then
have
plus
to order
the Washington
them.
State liquor tax, and you're just out.
Inslee got to get his.
Oh, yeah. I actually prefer a peated scotch for the most part. I do like, it's funny that we're talking about peated scotch. This season's scotch, Inslee Bray Oak Cask, is not peated.
Not peated at all.
No. And it's an enjoyable drink. And I definitely order it again. I'll probably keep this in my bar collection too. But it's a very comparatively sweet scotch.
It's very accessible.
It is. And peated scotches tend to be, I don't want to say an acquired taste because that sounds very masochistic, but
I mean, you're not far off.
Right.
I feel like a lot of alcohol or even just general beverages, right?
They can.
I feel that, like, I don't drink coffee. I don't particularly like the taste of black coffee. I do love frou-frou, you know, espresso
cappuccino,
drinks and cappuccino weirdness.
Italian.
But at that point, it's just sugar, right?
Starbucks has their niche. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But I don't like coffee taste for the most part. I don't like alcohol taste for the most point. Now, I'm sure there's some, like, Appletini that I would love, but we don't need to get into that because I have an addictive personality. And if I start drinking, it's going to be bad.
That's sure. good to know your limits.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny. Some alcohols have started for me that way. Others, I just like, and like, I, you know, talking about beers, I love a super bitter IPA.
Okay.
If I'm going for an IPA, I want it to taste like I'm chewing on a bushel of hops.
This is a kid who also was eating 95% coca.
That's true.
Dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Jake is a mindist.
I'm a little broken. And Scotch did kind of start for me, specifically Scotch kind of started for me, you know, wanting to be cool, sort of a thing. Like my girlfriend.
Why Jake want
to
be a cool kid?
I know. My girlfriend of the time when I turned 21 gave me a bottle of the Glenlivet 12, which is not super peaty at all, but it compared to, like, I had been drinking, because yes, I did drink before I was of age.
We're gonna have to edit that out.
I had drank beer for the most part and some wine. But like a higher proof alcohol, just period, it's like you have to drink it differently than sure, you would a beer.
Definitely.
Don't pound Scotch. Please do not pound Scotch.
For your sake and for the Scotch's sake.
Exactly.
Have a little more respect for both parties.
Yeah, please.
People out there listening.
But yeah, acquired tastes. It's interesting. I like peated Scotch. Griff likes peated Scotch.
I'm good without.
Russ is a Scotch and water hold Scotch type of guy.
You know, I have had several of those when I go out, and it always confuses the waitress. Yeah. Sitting back to electric vehicles.
One of the conversations that I always get brought up is like the anti-electric vehicle sort of movement is that...
God, that's an ironic way to put it.
I mean, I wouldn't even call it a movement. I don't want to say counter-argument because that gives it more credence than I want to.
Counter-statement?
Sure.
I would say just a facet against.
Sure. There is this argument that says that, you know, the production of these electric cars as they are currently,
specifically the batteries, correct?
Specifically the batteries, or at least that's the one that gets brought up.
That's the one that gets republished.
Right. But these cars in general outweigh what they save the environment.
The environmental impact to create them easily outweighs their lifetime of savings.
There's literally a term for this. It's called cradle-to-grave pollution.
Yeah, that one.
From an initial production point to when the car is scrapped or taken off the road.
Expected life.
Right. And for a long time, the argument was, because of all the rare earth metals and the mining practices and this and that.
Chemical combinations.
It was more environmentally harmful than, you know, a gasoline car, and this is what's ironic, because there's actually and Jake, I'm sorry, I'm kind of stealing your thunder here a little bit. There's a group literally called the Union of Concerned Scientists that did a study in 2015 where they analyzed this. They said, okay, are electric vehicles actually cleaner cradle to grave? And they found that yes, they were, even taking into account production, transportation, operating costs, atrophy, I guess, of the cars when they start to break and fall apart. They are cleaner than gasoline vehicles, which is kind of interesting to me. And they did, I don't know if it was them, but they did another study. Or a similar group did another study comparing the environmental impact of old internal combustion engine cars and newer ones. And they basically found that a 65 Mustang polluted more sitting in the driveway than a new Mustang did driving down the road, which is...
I mean, it's...
I love it and I hate it.
It's great when you look at, like, emissions testing, right?
Right.
And I think last year, Washington suspended emissions testing because they found that it wasn't having an appreciable effect on...
Which I find interesting that Washington would do that.
Well, they were I think it was the West Side that, you know, really pushed for it initially.
Still.
And we just kind of got tailed onto it. But it was interesting because looking at some of the stats that they were throwing out there, it was the older cars were worse... consistently. I mean, obviously, you know, and those are ones that were grandfathered into not having emissions.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, well, we can't do anything about the 64, you know, whatever. But the 97, you know, thing doesn't quite, you know, cut mustard. So you got to, you know, fix it up and make it better. It's not legal to drive. It's like, but I have the other one that you know, is literally pouring oil on my driveway.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and like the one question that I would still be, you know, concerned with as somebody who I wouldn't go as far as to call myself an environmentalist, not because I don't think that taking care of the environment is important. I think it is absolutely important, and it's one of the most important things I as a person can do. I'm just not very good at it, and that's why I don't want to use that name.
This would be a great episode all on its own.
Absolutely. Like, I hesitate to use the term for myself just because I'm so bad at it. But, like, my follow-up question, you know, from cradle to grave, does that include the actual, like, disposal of... Because we have, like, right. one of the examples that we have right now that we're struggling with is, like, all of these handheld electronics, especially what happens when we're done with them. There's this huge, awful pit, basically. I think it's in Myanmar, where a lot of electronics that we can't really recycle or don't care to recycle because it's expensive get melted down into the sludge and then just shot into this chasm.
Right.
And it's horrible for the environment.
This is one thing I wanted... I don't know if I want to say, I want to make it clear or whatever, is that there is no silver bullet. And I think a lot of times people who hold positions counter to the electrification of vehicles operate under the pretense that people who are in favor of electric vehicles are hailing them as like this panacea of all of our environmental woes. Mm-hmm. They are definitely not.
I'm like, sure there are groups that believe that.
Right. There are. It was just like,
there's always extremists.
There's
right?
always extremes.
Yeah.
But it seems like that's the majority of the hate is like electric car vehicle, you know, people who own electric vehicles, you know, like elitists, you've got their nose in the air, blah, blah, blah. Your car pollutes all this. Yes, electric vehicles do pollute. Yes, the methods by which we get the materials to create them can be specious. Mm-hmm. I won't lie. There are there are myriad ways where we can improve, as with anything, you know. The thing you have to keep in mind is that electric vehicles, as we know them and have started to interact with them, have only been around for about 15 years.
Yeah.
Okay, and look at where they are compared to where gasoline-powered cars were 15 years after their mainstream adoption. Okay, so they are not the end-all, be-all for clean transportation, but they are a whole lot better than what we have now. And all of these gaps are not sticking points and places where we can, where we should, you know, beat these cars down. They're places for innovation, right? Because we're talking about recycling. Jake, you're just talking about recycling electronics, batteries, like phones and, you know, all of our tablets and junk like that. There is a big question mark for recycling batteries from electric vehicles, but there are companies that are taking steps to reappropriate them into like industrial uses or residential uses, basically where the battery is just going to stay pretty out of stasis. It's not charging, discharging, getting hot, getting cold, where it's just kind of stable.
Right.
And I think it's a company in the Netherlands, Denmark somewhere. I don't know. It's a European country who has started working on sustainably recycling electric vehicle batteries and repurposing them.
Well, it's just, I think it's a matter of time.
In the right direction.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's just a matter of time before we do have facilities that can handle such things. Yeah, we just haven't learned how to do it yet.
Well, and that's the fun. And that's what I always say when people raise the infrastructure argument is we didn't have gas stations on every corner 15 years after cars
that's
came
true.
About. You know,
we're putting in charging stations for EV now,
but it's taking time. Station in your house.
And actually, like I have a friend of mine, Neil, who he and
shout out to Neil.
I know.
Neil.
Actually, I should have dragged him into this episode. I think he'd be a great point of view. He has an EV. Like that's the only car he has too. Like for me, one of the reasons why I haven't really actively looked into getting an EV is one, I live in an apartment that doesn't have any sort of charging available for me, and two, you know, it's distance to me has always been like a concerning factor. But he and I talked about that second one, or distance, or like the ability to charge effectively. There are charging stations everywhere, even in Spokane, which is not that big of a city. Certainly not. Honestly, I mean, we are getting there, but you know, we're not Seattle,
right?
And there are massive ones. And I remember even driving across state, like some of the smaller cities.
You can drive.
Still be some they'd have the Tesla supercharging stations and stuff like that.
You can drive from Los Angeles to New York in a Tesla.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you do have to stay on pretty main roads.
Sure. And you have to be more judicious with your planning of the route.
Plan it a little bit, right. But it's possible. Range anxiety is still a thing. And I can understand, you know, like if you want to go on road trips or longer trips, having a car that will refuel faster or have a little bit longer range makes a lot of sense.
Or if an emergency happens.
Exactly.
I can probably easier get it taken care of. However, there is also the question of whole, like, you know what? I go on those major road trips once every couple of years, if I'm being honest.
That's good.
I can rent a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I can borrow somebody's and swap them for sure. Mine.
So from a historical standpoint, and I don't know the answer to this, and you guys might not either, for the first, you know, introduction of the combustion engine, old school cars,
mm-hmm.
traveling across the U.S. would have also been pretty daunting.
Yeah.
There would have been a lot of planning involved to make sure could make it to the
months.
Next. Yeah. But it feels like one of those things that it is just because it's new and the right. infrastructure is being built as it you know, is.
Right.
We've already experienced this once. It's not new to us to be like, well, I need to make sure I go through major metropolitan areas to make sure that I have access to these resources. I think people kind of forget that, though, where it's like, oh, I want to be able to go anywhere I want. It's like, well, then don't use an electric car for right now.
Yeah, we have this
later.
Weird concept, and I'm sure there's an actual term for it, and maybe our resident rhetorician knows, but this lack of object permanence in time permanence?
Historical permanence?
Sure, where it's like things have always been this way. Like,
are you saying that we're forgetting history?
Kind of, yeah. At least the
buildup, right?
Yeah,
right.
Or like... Yeah, I mean, we remember the really big stuff, the world wars, the et cetera, exciting things.
Do you remember the days before you had a smartphone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you do for fun?
Talk to people.
I was in school.
Played video games.
Yeah. Well,
kids today in school have
smartphones, right.
You know? But I actually thought about that the other day. It was just weird because I'm like, what did I do before I had a phone and a computer and
spent a lot less time looking at my hand.
Yeah, well, granted, I still don't have games on my smartphone. I'm trying to remember if I have, but it's like, you know, I have access to my chat programs. I have access to
news
and the things. Yeah, but I mean, I grew up in the age like we always had a game console at home.
Sure.
I didn't even have a game console until like second or third grade.
Right. But, I mean, we just have this tendency to default to, like, this is the way that things have always been, and change is scary.
That's true.
But we forget as a civilization we've gone through these massive changes before.
Well, the transition, yeah.
Right. Well,
yeah.
And the added element now with electrification of cars is that not only is this not uncharted territory, but we have 123 years of technology and of know-how and of tools, and we have motivation to do it. So yes, there will need to be changes. That's guaranteed.
Oh,
the
yeah.
infrastructure will need to be bolstered. There will probably need to be developments in fast charging or in swappable batteries. But we have the tools to do this. And I honestly think some of these mandates that, you know, governments are coming out with are going to drive the innovation for this.
Oh, sure.
And I know a lot of times people are like, oh, big government. I'm the resident big government shill. I approve this, honestly, because this is one place where government intervention in the market is a good thing, because you're going to see, okay, companies are under the gun now.
Well, it's incentivization, right?
Exactly. It's a huge incentive because you're going to lose whole markets if you don't.
Yeah, and if we agree that... you know, this transition to electric vehicles is a good and important thing, which I think most people, gun to their heads, would kind of agree with, or they would at least be nonplussed by.
Sure.
Then absolutely, I think the government, this is one of those times where I think the government should step in. I mean, look at the issue, the times when they haven't. Most recently, the whole Texas power issue, where their whole grid was privatized. No government oversight, or very little government oversight, I should say. And lo and behold, what happened? Same sort of issue is happening with the oil pipeline in the East Coast. It's, again, like these private companies don't tend, not always.
They don't make changes if they need to.
But they don't make changes unless they need to. Now, there are, of course, exceptions to the rule. I think Tesla is kind of an exception to that rule. Don't get me wrong. I don't trust Elon really that much at all.
You don't trust the man that made a company called We Don't Make Flamethrowers, and it's not a flamethrower to make things that aren't flamethrowers?
Yeah. I get mistrustful of any sort of big tech, but I mean, this is
rightfully
not to say
so.
Government is the only answer, or that it's, you know, always a positive impact. Of course it hasn't been. And I think like the other arguments that boil, or most of the arguments against EVs tend, in my anecdotal experience, tend to boil down to that concept of like, I just don't want to change. I mean, you talked a little bit about the rural areas and this being potentially a problem, but it doesn't have to be.
That's the thing, is a lot of, I think, the naysayer ideology to this sees this change as a burden to progress, mm-hmm. or as an unnecessary diversion. But, and I'm usually the cynic in this group, or the pessimist, or the nihilist, I think that there's huge opportunity here.
Right.
And I will use a pretty narrow lane. A lot of times, I won't say every time, a lot of times when governments, whether federal, state, whatever, have gotten involved with transportation specifically, yes, there has been hiccup period, but it has ultimately been a net positive. Like, if you look at cars from 1955 until now, we've made gigantic leaps in safety, performance, longevity, emissions, everything across the board from an objective standpoint. We're not going to talk about, you know, the emotional side of cars, blah, 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 that, because that's entirely subjective. Mm-hmm. But cars are objectively better now than they ever have been. Right?
Yeah.
They're safer, they're more efficient, they're more aerodynamic, they perform better, you know. And
some happen to be electrical.
And yes, and I think that's the next step is, you know, back in probably the 50s or 60s when the federal government was like, we should have seatbelts in cars. There was a huge group of people. Our government overreach, bro, we don't need it. Look at it now. How many avoidable deaths were there that had seatbelts, or the collapsible steering column? Good Lord. If you got in an accident in like a 54 Chevy, you were getting impaled. Yeah. That's all there is to it. You're getting impaled. Sorry. You know, or you're going through, the windshield's going to grenade itself and shred you, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. And that's always an interesting thing that gets brought up with, I have a number of people in my life who are bikers, and they hate it when people or when government entities say, like, you have to wear a helmet, for one, because Idaho, I don't think you have to wear a helmet still on a motor, which is insane to me. But also, too, like, a lot of the times you'll get told, like, you really need to be wearing, I forget what the term is, but, like, the full face helmet.
Yeah.
Versus one of those, as an instructor who taught me how to ride motorcycles affectionately called them brain scoops, because that's what they're going to use it for if you get into a wreck.
An open face helmet?
An open face helmet.
Oh, God,
yeah.
Yes. I rode motorcycles for probably 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. I never wore anything less than a full Snell approved full face helmet.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, they're more comfortable.
I believe it.
Because you don't have, like,
stuff getting
with
in your eyes.
Exactly. With an open face, I've taken bees to the chin at 60 miles an hour.
Nope.
And yeah, even with an open face, even with a full face helmet, it's like burnt, you know, and kind of jars you a little
right.
bit. I couldn't imagine taking anything like a bee to the face
right.
with an open face helmet.
Right. But their argument is always like, government shouldn't be telling me what to do. If I die, I die. Yes.
Technically,
yes. I mean, at that point, I also bring up the whole, like, fine, you should be paying into the system too for whoever's going to have to scrape up your guts on
the side
of the road.
You're inconveniencing the EMS system. You're shutting down traffic.
Yeah,
I mean,
talk about healthcare. Like, it's
not
bad.
Just
and
you.
So,
we don't care about you. That's kind of the fun
part.
Right. And
we
so
care
often,
about everyone else.
Yes.
Exactly. And so often, like, that same approach is applied to this move to electric vehicles, right?
Right.
And it comes up, this is my favorite horse that I like to beat on this podcast, apparently. It comes up in the evangelical Christian arguments so often, it drives me insane.
This is fascinating.
I wouldn't expect it to at all.
Oh, man. But well, because apparently,
go, Jake, go.
I mean, I think this started in roughly the 80s, I want to say. There was a huge, leading up to the 80s, there was a huge resurgence in fundamentalist Baptists.
I blame Reagan.
Reagan. Reagan was kind of the culmination of a lot of this, actually. But like the idea that, you know, environmentalism is just a tool of the atheists and that sort of thing.
Well, Reagan took the solar panels off the White House.
Wait, was that a thing?
Yeah, Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the roof of the White House, and then Reagan took them down.
Really?
Not joking.
Even remotely surprising.
Fascinating.
Not joking.
Why is that not in a history book somewhere?
It is. It's just
YouTube.
Not
YouTube is your new history book. Like, I love to teach history. Sorry, continue.
Anyways, but it's like there's this narrative, and especially the evangelical side of Christianity, that's just like environmentalism is dumb or somehow bad, which that one I've never gotten. But it's been argued to me before, and I just kind of tune it out a little bit. This whole concept of EVs, I remember talking with somebody in the last church, like, and she effectively replaced me as part of the leadership. And we were talking kind of like a small group sort of setting because California also brought up a rule like Washington is bringing in like 2030, new cars are going to be internal combustion. And I said, I don't even know if I said anything to the affirmation of it, but they were just complaining about it. And I said, oh, yeah, I think that's probably a good idea or whatever. Like, I'd be looking into buying an electric vehicle. And I said, you know, because it's a positive impact on the environment. And the response, and it infuriates me to this day on so many levels still, was that, well, Jesus is coming back soon, so I'm not going to go out and buy a Prius. There is so much bad theology in that argument.
Wow.
Like, aside from the fact that humanity's very first job was to be a steward of the earth. You want to talk about the Garden of Eden?
Take a sip, Jake. heated,
but I mean, like, even if you believe that Jesus is coming back real soon because of the whole pandemic and people think that the end of the world is coming, globalist government, yada, yada, yada.
One can only hope.
Oh, man.
I like the conspiracy that it's already happened. The rapture happened. We're all just left.
No.
You know what? I don't agree with it, but man, it would sometimes explain some things.
I know, right?
Anyways, it's like saying that I'm a kid and I don't need to pick up my toys because my parents are almost home.
Yeah, which is a perfectly valid argument.
You're going to get in trouble when your parents come home.
Doesn't matter. We're not thinking that far ahead.
No,
that's the problem.
Clearly, we are not. And like for listeners at home, I don't know if you can really hear it in my voice. I am like
angry.
I am so
angry. Take a sip, Jake.
Like I'm flailing my arms. It is not good.
He's
because
pitching
a fit. I've been inundated with this argument so often, and it is tragic to me. Honestly,
it's a very short-sighted
short
argument.
It is unchristlike.
Well, and it's fascinating to me. I'm not heavy into religious groups and whatnot. I've never heard this. Like, I've never heard this aspect of it before.
Christians should be at the forefront of environmentalism.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, see, this is interesting because I'm gonna bring it up now. I have a very unique perspective on the whole thing.
And maybe this will fold into another episode.
I think we I don't care.
Interesting.
Like, I don't care.
Empathetic.
I'm apathetic. Now, I don't think we should go. I don't think that we should go dumping toxins into rivers again like we used to.
And still do.
We probably should slow that down a touch.
Yeah.
But,
but I'm not going to go buy.
You're not actively.
A Prius because it's like, oh, well, I can save the environment because of my. I don't care. Like this. I I don't subscribe to the ideology of prolonging the Anthropocene. For people who are listening at home who don't know what that is, the Anthropocene is a not yet geologically recognized epoch of when humans were the dominant life form on the planet.
Which
does
was
that make
a very, very academic way of explaining when humans go extinct. That's what they were going to call this time.
I mean, I'm not misanthropic. I'm not actively trying to bring about the apocalypse.
You're just apathetic.
I just don't care.
And
that's why I think colonizing Mars is a huge mistake.
I mean, there is so much that we could get into about the environmental side of things. It's another episode. Like I said, early in the podcast, I don't call myself an environmentalist due to a number of things, but largely due to the part, like, I'm just really not good at it. I have the means. I could trade my car in and go get a Prius. I could absolutely try harder. And now there are actually environmental reasons why I don't trade my car, or at least don't scrap my car. Trading my car in would be at least neutral. Like, scrapping the car or getting a new car without using up the one that I currently have is actually a negative impact on the environment.
Right. Buying a used car is more environmentally friendly than buying a new one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like that whole argument from the evangelical side of Christianity.
The other horse Jake likes to beat.
It's just so wildly frustrating to me, and I just, sitting down and logically piecing apart those arguments, I don't understand it.
If you're an evangelical Christian and you want to be on the show.
At me.
leave us a comment and buckle in.
So, with that, electric vehicles, good, bad.
Would you ever buy one?
I would absolutely.
Let's answer that. Would you ever buy an electric car?
They're the one barrier that I have right now is that I don't have a way to charge it at home.
Yet. That is the answer to all of the naysaying opinions. Oh, the infrastructure's not there yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't charge it at home yet. Oh, well, it only goes 300. It doesn't go 400 miles on a charge yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it will. Here's the great thing about capitalism. If there's a dollar to be made, somebody's going to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
And if one person does it, there's going to be another company that thinks they can do it better.
And cheaper, maybe.
Absolutely.
And I again, can't believe I'm saying this.
Ooh.
I love that the big three, minus Dodge, are getting into the electric game because they've got the tooling, they've got the designs. All they need to do is just develop some electric motors.
Yep.
They don't have to reinvent the wheel.
And they don't even have to develop their own.
No,
really,
they could
from the ground
source
up.
From anybody. They could source from anyone.
They can. Didn't Elon open source that patent?
I think the battery and the supercharger he did.
I thought they did the original motor too.
Maybe. We need to, and I read one article about this, saw a headline, that somebody was working on interchangeable battery packs from vehicle to vehicle. When that takes off, it's going to be huge because then you're going to be able to swap battery packs very quickly.
Yep.
And recharging your car will go from 30 minutes to 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, recharge time takes forever, but it doesn't.
My thing is like, we just can't stop. Like, electric vehicles are a step. They are not the final.
Sure.
I think electric vehicles are more inevitable than self-driving vehicles.
Yeah, we're running out of fossil fuels.
Looking at you, Tesla. And I think as soon as we start to legitimize rare earth mining and rare earth mineral production, it's going to be even better. Russ.
Yes.
Closing thought.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I had to get on my soapbox for 2 seconds.
Kick the soapbox over here for a minute.
Here you go.
No, I absolutely would love to have an EV. I am concerned. So a lot of the people that I visit are in very rural areas and do not have, well, I would say the road infrastructure is more of an issue than anything else.
Fair.
I'm less concerned about, if I have to stay there for 2 days to charge, not a big deal. I'm there for a week anyways.
Right.
But, it is a very unmaintained area. There are things like, dirt roads, gravel roads, which, sure, it's a vehicle. It should run on them just fine. I'm a little concerned about taking a Tesla on something like that because I don't want to put rock chips in my pretty car.
Would you want to put rock chips in a regular combustion-powered car?
I do it all the time in mine.
So why?
But it's a six-year-old car. I don't really care. I also don't visit my parents the first year I buy a new car.
Fair.
Just for that reason.
Fair.
But that's just it. Like I've contemplated. I actually ended up putting down a deposit and then retracting it from Tesla.
Elon let you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, as long as it's like within like 2 months.
Right.
But it was interesting because I was like, I'm going to go for it. I wanted to buy, which one was it? I always screw up the
Was it the Model S?
The bigger one.
Oh, that's the X.
The X. Okay.
Yeah, the one with the scissor doors.
Yes. which base is at 60K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, 69,420.
There you go.
Because Elon is 5 years old.
I'll pay it. Anyways, nice. So I did put down my deposit. I was willing to do it. And it just, the thought process of driving it around this town scares me to no end.
Which part?
Just the idea of door dings and rock chips and
that sounds like it's more of a contentious point with the price point of the car, not
pretty
so
much
the Tesla itself.
Oh, absolutely. Anything I'm going to spend that kind of money on, I don't
right.
want
Which,
other people to touch.
Perfectly reasonable. That's
if,
why
if honest, it was a 30K car, I probably actually wouldn't care
different
that much,
story.
Right.
Right.
And so and I think that's really where my stigmatism comes from as far as not wanting to have that nice of a car. I would have the same problem with a combustion-based. It's not really an EV versus non-EV sentiment on that one.
Right.
So as far as I'm concerned, I really don't classify them any differently. It's just the price point that they happen to be at of the one that I want. Like, fully decked out, this thing's like 120K. It's insanity. Yeah. But it comes with the button.
The button?
The button. Ludicrous.
Are you talking about like a dual motor performance?
I don't
Model
know what
S
it is. It's amazing
with
though.
Ludicrous.
Yeah.
It's
it goes real fast.
It's 0 to 60 in like 2.9 seconds.
It's amazing, but I gotta have that.
Have you ridden in one?
Not one of those.
Have you ridden?
I've ridden in a base, but not.
Jake, have you ridden in a Tesla?
No, like I lived in Silicon Valley and I never had the chance to ride in a Tesla.
Well, congratulations. There is now a Tesla shop here in Spokane. They have appointments.
I thought they were shutting down all of their shops. Anyways,
they just
different
opened
topic.
They just opened.
I gotta go find this place.
They're taking appointments for test drives right now.
To all the listeners at home, if you haven't ridden in an electric vehicle,
please go.
Or driven in an electric vehicle, do so.
Go find a friend.
Find someone or find a dealer that will let you take one out.
Mm-hmm. They're amazing.
Oh my gosh. And I will probably get flack from the car community about this. Yeah. We can talk about that later. I measure every combustion car I drive now by
the new standard.
Feel and the acceleration of the Tesla. Because my buddy's Model 3 snaps your neck.
Mm-hmm.
And the Porsche Taycan that I rode in, which is even more, holy cow, I almost threw up. It was so fast. The salesman's like, brace yourself. I'm like, okay. Oh, God. It's amazing.
Yeah, so in closing, I would say not opposed, just don't, kind of like, you know, Mr. Griff, in regards to the whole environmental thing, it's a checkbox that I'm happy to check, but really for me it's a price point thing, really where it comes from. Other than that, I'm good with whatever, reliability wise, replacement wise, repairability, they all seem to be pretty equivalent, and so I'm not really worried about that aspect of it.
And the more they come onto the market, the more they will
have those.
They will be more normalized.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully the price points will also drop because of
definitely, because you'll have competition. So.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll have parts that are more easily replaceable. Yeah. It's just a natural way.
Well, thank you, listener, for listening to this episode of Scotch and Socialism. It has been a great evening talking with these folks. Please like and subscribe on whatever platforms you listen to. Help grow this podcast. Share it with your friends. Share it with your families. Share it with your frenemies and even your enemies.
You put a lot of thought into that one, didn't you?
Sure. Please go and find us on our social media platforms. We promise we will try and be a little bit better about posting Scotch Socialism on Instagram and
Twitter.
Also scotchandsocialism.com.
Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify.
All the things. Have a good one.